This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Friday morning. Amy Jacobson here, and Jim Yurio is here, CNBC contributor. And the best part about Jim Yurio is that he owns the best burger joint in, well, you know what, actually, in all of Northern Illinois. I'm going to give you a big talk up.
Thank you so much.
Because it's true. But, and also, you gave me a gift this morning. Hello.
Yeah. Some Brant's wear.
Some Brant's, yeah. It's a hoodie, though.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot nicer than what Dan has.
Oh, good. Yeah, exactly.
Dan has a long sleeve t-shirt. Yes. This is a nice warm hoodie that I'm going to wear later.
Good. I hope you like it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. So how's the restaurant business going? Because you've been expanded. Now you can have 40% capacity,
yeah, let's just say the Northwest suburbs are listening to that and now actually are expanding to 40. Because I'm not speaking about my restaurant at all, but I go to a lot of restaurants over the last couple months that seem like they had a lot more than 40 in there. Our restaurant is doing pretty well. February is a terrible month anyway. And then, yeah, you know, it got so cold so we couldn't use our deck. And,
did anything, because there was a lot of snow, did anything collapse?
No.
Do you need a roof rake by any chance? We can help you.
I didn't even know what a roof rake was until you guys talked about it on yesterday's show.
So, I'm trying to find a roof rake, by the way. So if anybody has a roof rake that I could come and borrow, please call the show, 312-642-5600.
We're talking about this at the end of February. It's supposed to be like 40 degrees high.
I know. Well, the average temperature this time of year is 36 degrees.
Wow. Yeah,
so we got hit pretty hard.
This is outrageous.
With some snow.
Last year, I had this whole tweet thread about how my favorite day of the year is March 1st. Because I know the weather's relatively crappy about March 1st and all of March. But at least it has hope. On average, we have 460-degree days in March. Granted, they usually come in the last week of March. And I tweeted that about how excited I was for March. And then we all know what happened in March of last year. That was probably the worst tweet of all time.
Yeah, that was...
We collapsed,
yes. So big news yesterday. Ding dong. The Wicked Witch is dead. No, it's not the Wicked Witch, but it's Mike Madigan. He is the longest-serving speaker in U.S. history, folks. Imagine that. After 50 years in office, he's resigning at the end of the month. And you know why he's resigning. Because could you imagine him on the State House floor asking for permission to speak? Excuse me, Speaker Welch, can I have a question? Because he held, I mean, he was the bigwig. He was the big dog. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment, remembering Mike Madigan. Here's the current Speaker of the House, Chris Welch.
I think this is a time where people are going to write books about.
What?
You know, Mike Madigan provided strong, sustained leadership for the Democratic Party.
Yeah. What did Mike Madigan accomplish?
I can write the first chapter of the book, by the way.
What would the book be titled to?
It's going
to
be, I don't have a title yet for myself, but okay, so let's just take everything away from his personality, his quest for power, any potential. Let's say there was no corruption at all. It boils down to the most simple thing is that over his career, he envisioned Illinois as having this huge, great middle class that was made up of public employees and public employee retirees. But he made two critical errors in the whole calculation. He didn't realize that people would live 10 years longer than they thought they would 40 years ago. And he didn't realize that Scottsdale, Arizona was going to become the furthest west suburb and everyone was going to take their pension money and leave. So just based on those two things, his whole system didn't work and collapsed. And that's why we're here where we are. So even if he's the greatest guy in the world with the greatest intentions, which we can debate that for a long time, those two things made everything, he ruined everything because of that. And it's just kind of incompetence and not seeing the forest for the trees.
And he still might be named in this ComEd scandal. It names the office, but not the person. And we know that even though U.S. Attorney Lausch is going to be leaving at the end of the month, that investigation, I've been told by two sources, is going to continue.
Well,
it's not all, because people were worried because Tammy Duck, Senator Duckworth, Senator Sacka Durbin, they were very worried, and they actually said something to President Biden saying, hey, look, we keep him in his position. Because he's keeping other people in their positions because there's other investigations.
So I'm sorry if they have to scramble. But that, again, I don't care. I just wanted him gone and hopefully someone who can make better decisions based on the long-term health of Illinois. So whatever happens after that, I want him to, if he did things wrong, which, spoiler alert, he probably did.
This man, do you know how hard it was to find Mike Madigan? He does not own a cell phone. Oh, God. He does not have emails. No, what? this is, I mean, he is old school, or else he's hiding from something.
I'll go
and
B.
Finding his press person, it was easier to find Osama bin Laden and take him out than it is to find Mike Madigan, because he does not want to talk to the press. People in his district, I guess that's what you call it, yeah, you know, near Midway, because I'm sure he lives in one of the bungalows in Midway. Of course, you know. They're very upset to see him go.
He's done a really good job. He's taken care of the community.
I think that he's done a lot for the community. I know I voted for him.
As they stand on plowed side streets.
Yeah, I hear people saying those things, I don't even see if they're looking at the same things we've been looking at for our entire lifetime.
We live in different worlds.
Wow.
But listen to this. You got to hear this guy, all right?
He's done all right by me. You know, I'm a registered Democrat, and I just go along with those guys, whatever they need, whatever I need, and they help me, and I help them.
Hey, we just going along, get along.
I'm going to need a moment.
that's what it's like? I'm just going along. They help me, I help them. They rub my back, I rub their back.
Oh, geez.
312-642-5600. And here's one more resident.
It's amazing. I mean, it's all, you know, individual, bottom line, in the neighborhood, house to house, taking care of the voters that vote for you. A kind of an old-fashioned way of doing it, and obviously very effective for Mike Madigan.
Yeah, but not effective for the rest of the state, taking care of the people who vote for him at the expense of the rest of us.
Right.
You talk about the myopic view, it's maddening.
312-642-5600. Let's go to Mike in Union, Illinois. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Happy Friday. Hey, yeah, I just want to tell Mike Madigan, thanks for coming in and ruining our state. And he's not going to go to jail. His name is not on anything unless they got a videotape of him receiving cash. He's Teflon. He's old Bob. He's smarter than that. Guys, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mike, for the phone call. We just got a text message. Oh, great. Madigan resigns when Proft is away. LOL. I don't know if Mike or Dan would have had a party for him, but you never know. Greg and LaGrange, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
The history will be written about Mike Madigan. It'll be there plain for everybody to see, and there's plenty there now. My question is, why are we looking back on this? Let's look forward. Let's look at the police bill that's going to go through. Let's look at the K-12 education changes that are going to go through. Let's look at this idea that you can tear down statues of a man who the state's motto is at the land of Lincoln.
Can we celebrate today? Can we look back today and have some laughs, and then tomorrow?
Well, what would the name of the book be?
No, Jim, we can't. We can't look back. We can't look back because our problems are ahead of us.
I agree. I said basically the same thing. I don't care what happens to Mike Madigan at this point in time. I agree with you 100%. But I'm going to have some smiles today and hoping and for a future that's brighter. How about that? We can agree on that.
Yeah, Jim, you know what? You can smile today. I'm not going to smile today. You can smile today, but there's a lot of work ahead of us.
Amen,
a huge mountain of work.
Yep, that's so true. Thanks, Greg. Chiming in, of course, Governor Pritzker had to comment, you know, because Madigan controlled him as Madigan controlled Rahner, as Madigan controlled. He's been speaker so long. He's worked with 9 different governors and 10 different mayors of Chicago. Yeah. Okay, because, you know, he lives in Chicago.
Look, I wish Chairman Madigan, former Rep Madigan, former Speaker Madigan well. I mean, one thing I will say is that when you serve as long and in as dedicated a fashion in terms of just his sheer the number of hours that the man put into the job, his family can really suffer. It's a challenge for the spouses and children and grandchildren of somebody who's put that much into public service. And I really just want to call them out today and say they really deserve kudos for, you know, the public service that former Speaker Madigan did, because it's the family that often suffers the fact that he's not home when they would like him to be.
Are you kidding me? I mean, Mike Madigan, who valiantly drove down 55th Street to get to Midway because he has control of the state plane, not Rahner, because I saw Lisa Madigan in it once.
What was funny is that...
No, but I'm saying, like, what
yeah,
is
exactly.
he talking about? Lisa Madigan is grown, and she's got kids, and he adopted her, by the way. She's adopted. which is wonderful. I'm not making any disparaging comments about that. But the sacrifice his family made.
It seems like they benefited from their dad in a position of power. Amen. But if you're going to say that, oh my gosh, he worked so many hours and his family missed him, and that's when you look at his whole career and that's what you're coming up with. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason why he resigned yesterday or was resigning at the end of the month is because he's not the House Speaker.
Amen.
Because again, he can't. I would have given anything to have seen him on the state floor, you know, in the state house, on the floor, asking Chris Welch for permission to speak. Scott, do you have any comment about Mike Madigan? I mean, obviously you saw this coming.
Well, Mike Madigan was more or less, when I covered Mayor Daley full-time, working out of the fifth floor, Mike Madigan was normally a ghost. If he showed up at a press conference or he showed up something with the mayor or the governor, it was a rare occasion. Yep. At that point, it was very rare to see him out, even in his Southwest Side district.
Doesn't he have a castle in Ireland or something?
I don't know. I can neither confirm nor deny. Mike Madigan is still head of the Illinois Democrat Party.
Yes, that's the thing. And we don't know if he's going to resign from that position.
We don't know that. And because the Democrats themselves don't know the repercussions themselves of Mike Madigan stepping down at that point, because what will that lead to? And that's an interesting discussion all to itself. Madigan is, if you look from a political science perspective, he perfected machine, local, house-to-house politics, elevated it to a statewide level, and enforced it with ironclad rules not to be broken, or you were left out in Springfield. You were left out even here in Chicago. Alderman soon found that out very quickly at City Hall.
But if you didn't kiss the Madigan ring.
Yeah,
sure.
The only person who really could stand up when I was at City Hall who could stand up to Madigan was Rich Daley. That's it. Even the governor had to go carefully. George Ryan, when I was at the hall, had to maneuver carefully in order to make sure. And then there was that small 2-year stint where Madigan wasn't House Speaker. Lee Daniels was, I believe, from Elmhurst at that point.
Mike, quick question, though. If this was 40 years ago or 50 years ago, whenever it was, and Parky Cullerton left, that might have been more time than that. So my point is just the situation in Illinois ripe for just another Mike Madigan to come in, and in 2 years' time, it'll be essentially the same guy under a different name? Is that what's just going to happen?
I don't think so. Just looking at it objectively, I don't think there will be another Mike Madigan. I don't think, as you can see from Mayor Lori Lightfoot, the centralization of power at City Hall from the mayor's office has deteriorated. That's starting to crumble a little bit. I think you'll see more Democrats stepping up, especially statewide Democrats, stepping up to deliver power to other parts of the state. So I think the concentration of power will be limited. I don't think there's another Mike Madigan out there right now.
No.
Who can take his spot. On the other hand, there's no one from the Republican side who can effectively step into the vacuum at the moment either. Maybe Tom Demmer. Maybe there are a few others in the waiting in the wings. But so the question is, who is going to be in charge? Welch is a manager. And he's, according to insiders, fairly good at it. But he's no Mike Madigan.
All right, thanks so much, Mike.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Someone's in hot water this morning, and it's not me, and it's not you. Governor Cuomo under investigation by the FBI and by the DOJ in Brooklyn, Department of Justice in Brooklyn, for his failure to report the number of nursing home patients who died after being transported to hospitals. We all thought it was 9,000. We learned yesterday, Jim Muriel, that it is 15,000 nursing home patients who died because of him, and he was trying to cover up the numbers.
The whole story just is staggering. And the reason we knew at the beginning when they were trying to make him the hero of this, and he was writing a book about how he championed the cause. He wrote a book, yeah. But everybody knew that this story was out there. And the press, I mean, they wanted to blame everything on Trump so badly that this was, and people on Twitter, you know, some people, conservatives are screaming like, what, this, he did everything wrong. And let's say that if it wasn't nefarious and it wasn't corrupt, which now we're finding out that if it, the cover-up, which is, you know, going to be worse than the crime, it was just incompetence. It was just not understanding what he was up against and doing something, you know, colossally stupid. But then we acted like he was the king. This blows me away, this whole story.
I know. He should return his international daytime Emmy. Amazon should yank his books. Bookstores should yank his books off the shelf. He's no hero. And he's a bully. So there's a state rep. His name is Ron Kim, Democratic Assemblyman. And he was essentially the whistleblower. He's the one who said, no, we need the real numbers, because one of Cuomo's aides said that they covered up the numbers. So what they would do, they would put nursing home patients that were sick back into, that were in the hospital, back into nursing homes. And then they also allegedly would take dying nursing home patients, put them in hospital so they'd be listed as hospital deaths and not nursing home deaths.
That's sad, but the worst
but you
part,
see, I mean, that's,
yeah, it's crazy, but the worst part about it is that they were all, everyone was holding the line, you know, talking about, you know, how Cuomo was the man and the guy, and then everyone looks around like, wait, is it time that we switch now? Oh, yeah, we're switching, okay, and then Bill de Blasio comes out against him, the papers come out against him. I saw on Yahoo Finance the other day a big article, you know, implicating Cuomo. So why can't we have just watched this, you know, with the needle in the middle for the last 6 months, instead of waiting for everybody else to say, oh, it's okay now to turn on Cuomo? You know, clearly he was a villain, wittingly or unwittingly, this whole time.
And here's this this Democratic Assemblyman, Ron Kim. He said he was on Morning Joe yesterday, Jim, and he put up his cell phone and showed all the text messages and phone calls from Cuomo harassing him. He finally returned one of the phone calls. He yelled at him for 10 minutes and said, yeah, your political career is on the line. Change your statement. Yeah, here he is. This is the bullying. This is unbelievable.
Governor Cuomo called me the next day at 8 p.m. while I was about to bathe my kids. I was with my wife. And for 10 minutes, he berated me. He yelled at me. He told me that, you know, my career will be over. He's been biting his tongue for months against me. And I had tonight, not tomorrow, tonight, to issue a new statement, essentially asking me to lie and asking me, like, I heard and I saw a crime the other day. And he's asking me that I did not see that crime. And that was the line that he, you know, a line that he crossed that can't be undone. And that's why I had no choice but to come out and speak up.
Just the arrogance is mind-blowing of these guys. He thinks he's Teflon. He thinks he's some tough guy running the Italian neighborhood back 30 years ago. And he acts that way, and it blows me away. It's a character flaw of mine that I'm so pleased that this is all happening, because finally, you know, I wish I wasn't the kind of guy who could be like, aha. But of course, aha. We knew this for 10 months.
And here's the thing. So, William, you know what Mayor de Blasio's real name is, right?
Sure.
It
William
is
Wilhelm, right?
Yeah, Warren Wilhelm
Warren
Jr.
Wilhelm. Yeah, right, yeah.
Close, Warren Wilhelm Jr.
Yeah.
He said, no surprise here, folks, the Democrats are eating their own, all right?
Yeah, it's a sad thing to say, Mika, but that's classic Andrew Cuomo.
Oh.
A lot of people in New York State have received those phone calls.
Yeah, why don't you tell us that 10 months ago?
You know, the bullying is Warren? Nothing new. I believe Ron Kim, and it's very, very sad. No public servant, no person who's telling the truth should be treated that way. But yeah, that the threats, the belittling, the demand that someone change their statement right that moment, many, many times. I've heard that, and I know a lot of other people in this state have heard that.
So you believe Assemblyman Kim, that he was threatened?
100%. First of all, I know him. He's a good public servant. I've always seen him as a person of integrity, but it's just the script is exactly what a lot of us have heard before. It's not a surprise. It's sad. It's not the way people should be treated.
No, it's not.
And people, okay, and then you know what? These aren't just numbers. These are people's moms and grandmas and aunts and uncles who died because Cuomo did not do the right thing. You do not put a infected COVID patient in the highest risk setting in the highest category,
of course,
for spread.
Of
it's
course.
Like lighting, you know, a match in dry brush.
Sure, but let's just say we didn't know about how bad it was in long-term care facilities, that we didn't know how bad it was with elderly people with vitamin D deficiencies. Had he done that and then weeks later said, oh, man, we didn't know, we didn't have the information, and we did all the wrong things, I'd have at least a shred of respect for him. But the way it played out with, oh, no, we did, not only did we do everything fine, we did everything great, so much so that I need an Emmy and a book deal.
So we need a full investigation, unquestionably. This is about thousands of people's lives. This is about our elders, and there are families right now in New York State that lost a grandma, a grandpa, that lost an aunt or uncle. They're not sure what happened here. They worried something was done wrong. And the big question, how do we make sure it never happens again? This really hasn't been investigated. The truth hasn't come out yet, and we need it. We need it. These are people's lives. And the notion that information was held back for, you know, political convenience instead of the blunt truth coming out so we could save lives, something's profoundly wrong there.
Bill de Blasio is the voice of reason here.
I know. It held back for political reason. Information
Imagine
held back
that.
For political reasons.
Wow.
But I just wonder if it happened here. I mean, we've had 3,000 nursing home patients die, and a lot in the, you know, in the vet, the VA down south, 33 people died, or I'm sorry, 23 died there, and it's just...
It's terribly sad.
But Cuomo blamed the staff. He said, no, this isn't because I was shifting people from the hospital back to the nursing home back to the hospital. It's because the staff brought it in.
Is it just, a question to you, is it just the 2020, 2021, with social media everywhere, can a politician never, ever, under any circumstances, say, you know what, I messed that up? Did that ever happen before?
Why can't we have that?
I would love it.
Why can't we have nice things? I know. Why can't Pritzker come out and say, you know what? This mask thing for this certain age group, we don't need it.
Yeah, instead of saying three masks, we're three instead of one. That's what we should do.
Right. That's. Yeah. I mean, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. What should happen to Governor Cuomo? And I'm so sick of him being celebrated. Marvin in Burlington, Wisconsin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, what he did was, was bad, and I think what happened to him, he basically didn't have good information or wasn't certain about what to do. But this is so much bigger. This is a microcosm of what goes on every day in every newsroom in this entire country, how they obfuscate and lie about stories or bury stories that doesn't promote their ideological viewpoints. And this is what that is about. Also, this is the Democratic Party at its finest. New York. This is what the people of New York City voted for, because the city is what puts them in the governor's office, no matter what they do upstate. And same thing in Illinois. This is what the people voted for. This must be. It's astonishing to me that this just repeats and repeats and repeats. They can't tell the truth. The newspapers are the megaphone for them, and if they would tell the truth about their ideas and what they want to put forth for the public, they would be voted out of office 9-1.
Amen, brother.
All right, thank you so much for the phone call. I mean, could he be charged with involuntary manslaughter?
I don't know. Do you care? Is that what you want?
No, I want to find out what the probe by the U.S. Attorney's Office discovers. I'm not asking, trying to put you on the spot because I don't know what I want either.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Because people died and you can't bring them back.
Of course not.
These horrible decisions that our leaders made.
Yeah, that's what I want is people to acknowledge and the press to acknowledge that it was a horrible decision. And it was incompetence at that, you know, the most important person in the country at that point in time was Andrew Cuomo, because that's, you know.
He was America's governor.
He was America. Well, in New York City has, you know, 50,000 people per square mile. They have a transit system that's packed. That was going to be the first spot that there was going to be a big spread of COVID. So it was all on him to do the right thing, and he didn't. And I just want that to be out there. He didn't, and he doesn't deserve a victory tour and to, you know, skate around the ice with a flag draped over his shoulder.
And this morning we're learning that CNN has banned Chris Cuomo from covering the scandal-ridden situation that's going on, so he cannot have his brother on. Because you remember, those two used to yuck it up.
I hope you are able to appreciate what you did in your state and what it means for the rest of the country now and what it will always mean to those who love and care about you the most. I'm wowed by what you did, and more importantly, I'm wowed by how you did it. This was very hard. I know it's not over, but Obviously, I love you as a brother. Obviously, I'll never be objective. Obviously, I think you're the best politician in the country. Okay. But I hope you feel good about what you did for your people, because I know they appreciate it. Nothing's perfect. You'll have your critics.
Thank you.
But I've never seen anything like what you did, and that's why I'm so happy.
Me neither. We've never seen anything like it either.
Break out already.
And I hope you know that.
Yes. Dear Lord. And then they had a shtick once where, like, who's better looking?
Oh, God.
I mean, I vomited. I threw up in my mouth.
I am right now again. It's all bringing it all back. My sister and I had this huge argument. This was about 7, 8 months ago when this was going on. And she, you know, we're from a close-knit Italian family with a lot of brothers.
Hey.
So when those two were on together, my sister was like, it's so cute how he stands up for his brother. I'm like, stop. Don't, they're not like us at all. We would be telling the truth, and they're not telling the truth.
Good point.
Yeah.
Jim in Warrenville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning.
Hey.
You know, Amy, I will answer your question. I think you should be charged with manslaughter. Why, they went after the president with some ridiculous things. Bush lied, people died. Well, you know what? Cuomo lied and people died. And there was no reason for it. It was because of malfeasance. It was because of political opportunism, because they were looking to do anything they could to hurt President Trump. And you know what? The chickens have come home to roost, as good old Reverend Wright would say.
Yep.
All right, Have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Jim. Thank you so much. Jason in Northlake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
My comment with Trump, they kept hanging all the debts on him, you know, the whole entire country, and then people with the world, and Cuomo was right up there with him. And now you look at directly what Cuomo's policies did and covering it up, and we've all known this for 10 months, so it was so infuriating while people would just raise Cuomo up, tear Trump down, and we all knew the truth. So it's refreshing at least that finally, you know, there's some sort of light coming out, but even the press, you know, buried it. Everybody knew about this. They just lied and covered it up, especially just to, you know, at all costs, get Trump out of office no matter what it takes.
Yep, and people were listening to Chris Cole. You know, we're up against the clock. We're going to take your phone calls coming up. 312-642-5600.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Quickly, let's go to the phone lines. David in Lansing, you are on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. To the critics of Cuomo, his opponents in government that are criticizing him, and they can't keep up with the bullying, they can't keep up with the lies, and he's getting a pass because he's a Democrat. To them, I say, you just have to run faster.
Oh, I see what you did there. Thanks, David, for the phone call. Let's go to Dawn in beautiful Crystal Lake. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning, Amy. Andrew Cuomo is a Roman emperor in his own mind. I called his phone several times, state phone line several times to leave comments out of concern with respect to the things that he was saying and doing over the months. I never received a return call. I am a genealogist, and I'm very familiar with all of the ethnic neighborhoods in America, very familiar with the culture of New York and New Jersey and the Italian neighborhoods. And I love the Italian people. Lots of beautiful families, lots of beautiful people, and great food. But I, as well as many of folks in their own neighborhoods, recognize that amongst the men, there is a very highly competitive spirit. And there is, amongst certain men, a tendency towards wanting to be either a capo or a Roman emperor who feels that they have to control everybody in the land. And unfortunately, I think that's what Andrew Cuomo is.
Yeah. I know. Oh.
By the way, I can also confirm everything you say.
Oh, because you're Italian, so you guys can have that conversation.
We know a little bit about
that. But remember, he was so celebrated, not only the book, but in the international daytime Emmy. But also, there was talk of him being vice presidential candidate.
Oh, sure.
There's talk of him being the attorney general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I remember it was it's mind-blowing. It's like,
and all along he knew.
It's the twilight zone we were living in back then. Every step he took was the wrong step, and everyone who was paying real attention was saying like, "What? Well, that's the wrong thing to do." And then we're being told, "No, no. It's the right thing to do. You guys are just seeing it wrong." Well, we weren't seeing it wrong.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Uh-oh, it's happened again. This time to a Republican. Oh, no. Rules for thee, but not for me. Good morning, Amy Jacobson here. Jim Urio in for Dan Proft today. And I got to tell you, you're really good at this radio stuff.
Thank you.
I give you an A plus for the last hour. Okay. And also the owner of Brandt's in Palatine. And if you haven't checked it out, Justin and I were talking. We don't know if we like your burgers better or your ribs.
Right. Well, you know, most people, if you go in there the first time, burgers are what people know us for. You know, that's about 60-70% of what we sell. And again, I'm not claiming that we bought the restaurant that had the best burger in the Chicago area. I didn't. It's not my creation at all. But
when did you buy Brandt's?
We bought them 8 years ago last week, or 2 weeks ago, 8 years ago.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. And then we had to close for like 3 months to get it all back up to code. And we opened up in, I remember we opened up on the night of the National Basketball Championship, the college. So that must be the first week of April is what I guess on a Monday.
That's great. And then you're going to expand your deck, right?
We are going to expand our deck. We just looked at lumber prices, which at some point in time, I'd love to talk about markets and commodities. But yeah, we just looked at lumber prices. I don't know if you know they've tripled. So yeah, we're expanding the deck. If you guys have been there before, we have the really cool wood deck. We're going to make that about a third bigger and wrap it around. And then eventually we're going to have an outdoor bar with TVs and everything.
Oh, sweet.
We have the plans. It's really cool. I don't know when it's going to be done, but it's going to be fun when it is.
I got to tell you, though, the lumber thing is a real issue because my neighbor has been trying to redo his front steps. He's like, I cannot get lumber.
Oh, yeah.
It's because of COVID. It's coming from Canada, right?
And well, there's a couple different reasons. And this, it's a dollar issue, too. If I start to go too deep in the woods about the financial stuff, just give me
I'll give you the break
thing.
Sign,
yeah,
this one.
Okay, so when the government decided to zero out interest rates across the board, the Fed, and then spend an extra $6 trillion over the last couple of years, accelerated. Now, commodities are doing well. That's why we're seeing Bitcoin doing well. We're seeing lumber doing well. But lumber was one, like, people loved the story because it was actually a real organic fundamental story as well. That was people moving out of the cities, building places in the suburbs, going for more space, and building new things as a response to the COVID. And so lumber has just soared. Lumber has tripled what it was a year ago.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So, but you can get your hands on some lumber, right?
I hope so. I mean, I got a guy.
He's got a guy. Got an underground tunnel. All right. Well, I'm sure you've heard Ted Cruz this morning is waking up in Texas. He's no longer in Cancun, Mexico, but he explained himself because, of course, Telemundo was there. Chacamundo, I call him, in the Cancun airport. Saying, what's going on? Why did you leave during one of the biggest snowstorms and ice storms in Texas's history?
Well, Texas is going through horrific storms, and millions of Texans have lost power and lost heat and have been hurting. And our family was among them. We had no heat and no power. And yesterday, my daughters asked if they could take a trip with some friends, and Heidi and I agreed, so I flew down with them last night. Here, and now I'm headed back to Texas and back to continuing to work to try to get the power on. What's happening in Texas is unacceptable, and a lot of Texans are hurting.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. He did it for the children. My daughter wanted to go to the Ritz-Carlton in Cancun, so I took her there. I mean, because guess what happened, Jim? We found out his real flight plan. He was leaving this Saturday to go back home.
Oh, so interesting.
So this whole, I was just there to drop them off because,
of course,
it's a foreign country. I got to make sure they're safe. Well, and then, and I'm a big Ted Cruz fan. I love Senator Ted Cruz. I think he was brilliant for questioning the election results. I don't hold that against him.
Sure,
I don't
we're
think
not
going
to pass up
job.
An opportunity to skewer a politician of any sort. We're non-denominational when it comes to skewering stupid things, I hope, right?
But 23 people died. So, the last reports from the AP, you had, thousands of people. Tens of thousands of people without power. Their power is back, by the way. Now the problem is clean water.
Let's keep it in perspective, too. He's a U.S. senator. He's not a governor. He's not really responsible for the micro goings on of the state. So what we're saying here, and if we agree on this, is that we would feel more comfortable with a video of Ted Cruz shoveling a walkway or feeding a sea turtle. And that would, we're supposed to gain comfort from that. So I, what I'm saying is, I don't, it's not a, it's a funny story and I'm going to laugh at it. And anytime a politician steps in it, I think is pretty humorous, but realistically, who cares?
Well, his constituents care and they were quick to grab the microphone.
And that's fine.
Bud back over here and help us out.
Ted Cruz has never cared about us. I feel like, so I think it's time for a change.
312-642-5600. I don't think he's going to lose his Senate seat over it, but, you know, there's still time.
And they have every right to be upset. I mean, they're the boss. You know what I mean? He works for them.
But I just, is it as bad, though, if we compare to what other governors have done?
No, the ones who tell us to lock down and then leave the state themselves, like Governor Pritzker has done or allegedly has done for. No, that's infinitely worse. No?
Yeah, no, I agree, because we've got the governor or the mayor of Austin, Texas, who was in Cabo San Lucas. But nobody knew, and he was doing a Zoom conference call from Cabo and said, don't leave your house if you don't have to. Don't travel if you don't have to, while he was in Mexico.
Nice. I hope he had a disguise or something.
Then you have the mayor in Denver who did a press conference because it was coming up on Thanksgiving. Stay home. Don't travel. Don't be, sit this one out. And then he goes to the airport and flies to Mississippi to be with his family and his mom and his mother-in-law and daughter and wife for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
But they're all Democratic politicians, but now we have a Republican.
Yeah. Well, let's go after him, too, because it's fun. But, yeah, I mean, the consistency of them doing the thing with the lockdown was staggering to me.
I remember Governor Pritzker, it's the rules for thee but not for me.
Amen.
And I would never give a rat's patoo about what Governor Pritzker's wife or kids do. But he had so much control over my children when it came to their sports. When it came to in-person learning, he left it up to the superintendents. Instead of being like Governor DeSantis, who said, no, I'm not asking you. I am telling you, superintendents, you mayors of places like Miami, you are having in-person learning.
Yeah.
This does not affect our children. There is no student-to-teacher spread is going on. Not one reported case in Europe and so far in America.
Right.
Knock on wood. Catholic schools, private schools, nothing.
I think there's something more nefarious that went on with the Pritzker thing, too.
Well,
I think,
here, let's take you back in the time machine, shall
please
we?
Please do, yeah.
My wife and my daughter were in Florida before the stay-at-home shelter-in-place orders were put in place. And they stayed there. That when the orders were put in place, they sheltered in place, as was the order and the suggestion. They have since returned home and isolated for a period of time. But they're home now and they're safe and no one is a carrier.
And then later in that same press conference, we learned that no, they're actually at the farm because they have a working farm and they're essential workers.
Take care of the animals.
No,
Amy?
She milks the cow. You gotta milk
somebody's
got
to milk the cows.
I mean, my God. So, and now they're back in Florida, and that's fine. But she's texting pictures on her Instagram, the daughter, and she's having a great time. While our kids are stuck in the basement on day 339 in a cold, damp, dreary basement, e-learning, she gets, because they have money and means, obviously, out there with her friends, working out without a mask. My God, I would kill to work out without a mask.
Yeah, running on a treadmill with a mask is like
it's hell.
Stupid. Exactly. Yeah.
This is so stupid what we're doing.
The whole thing is stupid. And again, what I was about to say before is that J.B. Pritzker had a much more nefarious motivation to lock everything down. When he took over math that didn't work in our city, the only thing that could ever work for him, I'm just saying, this is a psychological way that it's easy to believe he looked at it. I'm not saying 100% sure, but to crash our economy and then look to the federal government saying, gosh, look what COVID did to our economy. Can we have some money? I think there are people who would think that that was a pretty good plan. I think it was an absolutely immoral and awful plan.
Yeah, and we've ruined lives and livelihoods.
No doubt about
and
it.
And the suicide rate among kids because they couldn't go to school is shameful.
Absolutely shameful.
And they didn't do anything. October 27th, I came with a list of suicides from Cook County to him and Dr. Nzeega. I'm like, we have a problem. We have 5 COVID deaths, and these kids were sickly, the 5 that died. And that was early on, early on in the pandemic. Now we have better therapeutics, better things to do to keep them alive. But like
care.
The suicide rate, this is a problem. Yeah. And these moms kept calling me from District 214, District 203. There's no room at this in the psych wards.
Oh, yeah.
There's no beds available. And there's still, to this day, there are no beds available. Call Children Lurie's Hospital.
No, no, no. I've talked to you about this, too. I was having some problems with someone very close to me who was falling back into addiction and falling back into, you know, emotional problems. And I called this buddy of mine who's got who had two siblings who had addiction problems in the past, too. And I said, you know, we're going through this again. It's gotten really bad. And he's like, yeah, yeah, both of my siblings are MIA and on big, you know, addiction benders now. So I think if you took a poll and asked people if they were affected more by the virus or they were affected by the aftermath of these asinine lockdowns with emotional addiction problems, and particularly, and you're mentioning the children, which is by far the worst part of this whole thing. But I think, come on, nobody. There should have, this, the whole lockdown thing should have been discussed by private sector doctors, you know, epidemiologists, mental health care doctors, yep, and economists to talk about, and, you know, behavioral economists to talk about what happens when everybody loses their jobs.
And people want to know that their leaders are suffering through the same hardships that they are. Okay. I'm not jealous or envious. Yeah, I would like to be a billionaire. I'm never going to be a billionaire.
But never say
just
never.
To know, but just to know that, you know, that they're feeling our pain. That
would be nice.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
But they're still there.
But the animals. The animals need to be cared for. If no one's milking those cows, then what happens? I don't know. I don't know anything about cows. Yeah.
Joe in Franklin Park, good morning. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, first off, to compare what Cruz did to these politicians in lockdown are apples and pomegranates, because there was no mandatory lockdown with what Cruz did.
Bingo.
And I'm not excusing his behavior because the optics are different. But that's the true problem, is why are the optics more important than what the true causes were? Why was the energy down? Why don't we hear more about that? You know, what was Cruz going to do? Bust out the Gilligan's Island bike and start riding for electricity?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, what can he, as a senator too, what can you do?
It's not his job.
It's not his, yeah. It's the governor's job and local, you know, mayors and community activists. Larry, you're in Carroll Stream. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, good morning, Ann and Jim, Amy and Jim. Amy, you're
like
praising Brands for the greatest cheeseburger, but you're missing one big thing. This is Lent. It's Friday. It's the best pepper and egg sandwich in the state.
You're my
you
man. Thank you. Thank
really?
You. The pepper and egg sandwich is good that we have on Fridays, and it is Friday today.
Oh, that's right. Lent. Yeah. Oh, you can't
and we also have a fish fry, too. Yeah, I told my partner I'd try to get
the egg sandwich in about 4 hours.
Oh, you're the man. I told my partner I'd try to plug Brands once every half hour. We're doing good so
we're
far.
Doing, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Good.
Yeah. All right, coming up,
okay,
we're going to take, thanks, Larry, back to Ted Cruz and other politicians who are following the same rules. 312-642-5600.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Hi, good Friday morning, everyone. Got to get that roof rake out. You know why? Because some snow is coming on Sunday.
No, it's not.
Yes.
Yeah, really?
I'm not making this up.
No, we've had enough of this.
My roof is going to cave in. And real quick, let's go to Greg. And Craig in Mount Greenwood, if he's still there. You have some roofing tips real quick?
Oh, hey, Amy, thanks for taking the call. Yes, sure do. Forget about getting that roof rake, especially with all this, when you get the freeze thaw and the ice on that edge of that roof and everything, that you'll have so much damage on your roof in the spring with torn off shingles and stuff like that. You don't want to do it. It's like there's actually more damage to be done by yanking that snow if it basically is, if you get some ice and everything like that, it'll take a couple shingles with it, and it'll hurt your roof.
Okay.
Well, roofs could cave in, though. That would be more damage, right?
That's true.
Couldn't roofs cave in then? I mean, it seems like risk reward here.
No, the roofs are designed to take the snow load.
All right,
but I got a lot of snow load going on because for some reason I have more than my neighbors because of the way the wind was blowing.
You ought to see my outdoor kitchen. My outdoor kitchen with a little roof over the barbecue and everything. That it's up on little sticks and everything. It's got 2 foot of snow up on top of it, and it's still standing.
All right. Well, hopefully it'll stand when more snow comes. Thanks.
February is irredeemable in the Chicago area.
Why do we live here?
Why? Well, no.
I mean, October
and September, it's fabulous. You remember some of those days at Brant's Palatine where it would feel like a party out there and everybody was, you know, when the weather's great, we love it here.
I will never forget going to your place after the first riots and after, you know, just dealing with a lot of stuff. Like thugs going down our neighborhood, smashing car windows. just it was hell because the Saturday it was downtown. Then Sunday night it was on the south and west sides, and then Monday it was up north.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for they're fixing for a fight, you know, and stealing stuff, and it was hell. And I remember that next day I had to get out of the city. And I remember sitting down at your place, and I started crying.
Wow.
Like, wow. Oh, people aren't, because you know what it was? I wasn't hearing sirens, because we heard sirens and choppers for, it was, I think, 5 nights straight. Man. It was manic. Like, you felt like you were at war. We were in war.
That just bums me out so much.
And but then I'm glad when I got to your place, and I sat down, and I just was like, I don't hear a siren. And I was shaking, and my sister's like, you need to sleep. And I slept 17 hours at her house
in
Arlington Heights. So
I love the
after
suburbs.
Eating a nice meal.
Yeah, right.
It's your place.
Yes.
All right, but let's talk about schools, because the kiddies are going back. March 1st, K through 5th grade goes back. And then on March 8th, K through 8 should all be back in class. But what about those high schoolers? With that, let's welcome back to the program, Adam Angieski. Adam, did I get it right?
You nailed it, Amy. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much for pronouncing my last name correctly. It's not easy.
I know.
Angieski.
Got a lot of consonants there and some vowels kicked in. Adam, by the way, you can. What's your Twitter handle so people can follow you?
So it's at @open_the_books.
Okay. And you're CEO and founder of OpenTheBooks.com. Recently writing a column, Chicago's Big Education, Inc., and the Pentagon pays more than $1,200 for a single coffee cup. We'll get to that in a second. But let's talk about CPS and the CTU and how they're extortionists.
Well, it's Big Education, Inc. So everyone recalls on Super Bowl Sunday, finally, the teachers' union negotiated with the school district, and they said they're going to go back in the classroom, and you delineated the timeline very well, Amy. But yet still the high schools aren't back in school. So what our auditors did at OpenTheBooks.com is we took a look at how much money the Chicago Public Schools spend every single year. Incredibly, it's $6.2 billion. Over the course of the last 5 years, their revenues are at an all-time high. They're up $1 billion on revenue. And look, state and federal taxpayers on that 2020 pandemic budget, when they're not in the classroom, we put $2.5 billion into that school district, and the teachers refused to come back in for in-person learning. Meanwhile, the Chicago Catholic schools have been in-person learning since September. And guess what? Their scores are going up.
Yeah, because it's in-person learning.
Adam, you mentioned those numbers, which are unbelievably astronomical dollar amounts. What percentage is pensions included in those numbers, or is pensions teased out? And if so, if they're included in that, what percentage goes to pension?
Well, it's always funny math when you're talking pensions in Illinois.
In Illinois, funny math? Pension. How dare you? But anyway.
Truth in accounting has the Chicago Public Schools pensions underfunded by $13 billion. Now, it's probably not even properly disclosed on their own financial balance sheets, but Chicago Public Schools admits they're $13 billion in the red, that their liabilities exceed their revenues, exceed their assets by $13 billion. Look, we took a look at just rank and file teachers, okay, in the Chicago Public Schools. The average teacher in 2020, when they refused to come into the classroom at all for the entire year, on pay and benefits, the average teacher cleaned off $108,000.
What?
And over the course of the next 44 years, because of the union contract they just signed, they're going to get a $16,000 base salary pay hike.
That's criminal. Because considering, too, guys, they don't work 16 weeks out of the year. Do you know? I mean, keep that in mind.
Yeah,
16
true.
Weeks, they are at home and they're free to do whatever they want. So, as a parent, do you have anybody have any suggestions what we can do? I mean, I've talked to Paul Vallis. I talked to other community leaders. What as a parent of two high schoolers we can do? I talked to the principal, and they're not even working on a plan. But if St. Ignatius, if Loyola, you know, they have 4,000 plus students, if they can figure out a hybrid plan, why can't CPS? I mean, Lane Tech is just as big as St. Ignatius. You know, they're about the same size, but no one's even trying to put pods together, or they're just sitting there twiddling their thumbs.
Well, look, Amy, I think we need two common sense reforms. The Chicago Teachers Union, they were going to strike rather than go back into the classroom. That was their position all the way until they caved on Super Bowl Sunday. And look, they rarely lose a pay and workplace fight. They've gone out on strike 3 years, three times in the last 8 years, and they've accumulated these lucrative contracts. And I want to give you an example of this. Custodians, school district janitors in the Chicago Public Schools, they have pay packages as high as $101,000 a year. They've got base salaries up to $75,000 a year for the school janitors. Now, contrast that with the Catholic schools in the city.
Yeah.
After 30 years, a PhD teacher can only make $59,000. The school janitors out-earn the school janitors at Chicago Public Schools out-earn the PhD teachers after 30 years in the Catholic schools.
And we're not even mentioning the guaranteed defined pensions in an environment with zero interest rates. And for people who don't really know how that's valued, like the net present value of a revenue stream goes up infinitely as rates go to zero, because the assumption is that you know, in a normal world of normal interest rates, people can invest money and get return on it. These pensioners have this guaranteed going forward, except perhaps if the creditor fails, going forward, there's no risk to it at all. That should be added into their, you know, when we're talking about teachers' salaries and people mention just the base salary, it's you know, ridiculous to not mention the pensions.
Right. You got to add 30 to 40% in to the base salary on top of that to get true taxpayer cost per position. And that's why the average teacher, according to our calculations on pay and benefits, cost taxpayers last year $108,000. And it's pretty significant because there's 21,000 teachers in the Chicago Public School District.
And then this is amazing in this article, which you guys should go. We'll tweet it out in cityjournal.org. Janice Jackson, the CEO of CPS, makes more than the U.S. Secretary of Education.
And it's not even close, Amy. Thanks for pointing that out. It's $61,000 higher. Look, you know, Betsy DeVos was a great Secretary of Education in the Trump administration, and she made a base salary of $199,000. The base salary for Janice Jackson at Chicago Public Schools is $260,000. Oh. On top of that, Chicago Public Schools discloses that her benefits are worth another $62,000. For a grand total, Janice Jackson's cleaning off $322,000 a year.
Wow. What? Okay, so is the whole moral of the story that public pensions don't, public unions don't really work, because every time they sit at the table, they're negotiating with people on the other side who don't really care. It's not their money. They can just, if the meeting gets too boring, yeah, sure, we'll give you whatever you want. That's, it falls apart, doesn't it?
And here's the reform on the teachers union. You need to take away in Illinois the ability for teachers to strike and go out of the classroom. They cannot hold the students hostage for pay and pension demands. It's not working, quite evidently, for the taxpayer, for the students, or the parents in the state of Illinois. We need to eliminate the right to strike provision. They need to be, you know, they'll tell you education is essential. And we need to classify them like air traffic controllers, national emergency. I mean, we need these kids in the classroom. They don't get the ability to hold them hostage. We need to take away their ability to strike.
So one more thing. I saw when L.A. teachers were talking about going back to work, the paper listed their demands, and there were some hysterical things.
Oh, we have hysterical demands, too.
Yeah. Oh, we do. That's what I want to go over.
Oh,
I love
hysterical demands. They want a moratorium on rent and mortgages being paid in low-income neighborhoods. They want their own rent and mortgages paid after on top of the salary, and they want to defund the police.
It's nice.
But what else did L.A. want? Do you have?
No, they wanted universal basic income or something like that. I remember reading it and just laughing, like that the teachers union is going to be arguing for things that are so non-teachers union related. It blows me away.
Well, in the Chicago Public Schools, we see that infrastructure already laid down, Jim and Amy, and I want to give you some examples. So you got Maurice Sweeney. He's the chief equity officer at the Chicago Public Schools. And last year, he made $214,000. He's got six people that he manages in his department. And we could not locate on his Twitter feed, not one single time, him outlining the education damage that Chicago Teachers Union was causing to minority students by keeping them out of the classroom. He makes significantly more than every governor of the 50 states as the chief equity officer at CPS.
And what does he? Yeah, and what does he do? I mean, it's just ridiculous. We've got to change CTU. They have to be treated like police officers, where you cannot strike.
Yeah.
And what? And you know what? Absolutely. Lost in all this, Adam. I have never heard one CPS teacher say, "Well, I miss the kids," or I want to get back. I want to see how Jimmy's doing. Whereas I think they brought a news crew up to Wakanda, and all the teachers talked about was, I can't wait to see my kids. I can't, you know, the faces, they're going to light up when we see each other. That is lost in all this. The kids are just, you know, they're pawns in this.
Well, and you remember Sarah Chambers over the Christmas holiday. She's an executive at the teachers union, and she flies off to Puerto Rico on the same day that she's tweeting out that teachers should refuse to go back into the classroom because it's dangerous. She gets on an airplane, goes to Puerto Rico, and is partying in the streets of Old San Juan.
I know. It's just sick. Anything for that mofongo. All right, Adam Andrzejewski, thank you so much for joining us. He's the CEO of OpenTheBooks.com. Read his article. We'll tweet it out here at the station. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you guys. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Busy news week. Dan missed out on a lot this week. We had Mike Madigan stepping down after 50 years, you know, in the state legislature. Lori Lightfoot, our mayor, apparently using COVID-19 funds to pay off police. We'll talk to Gary McCarthy, the former Chicago police superintendent, at 7:35 about that. And we also had the passing of a giant, a voice like no other, Rush Limbaugh, dying from lung cancer at the age of 70. And he really changed broadcasting forever. And a lot of people have written a lot of articles, some not so nice, against Rush Limbaugh. I'm very shocked at what they allowed on Twitter. But a beautiful article that was written by him was from Scott Bertram. He is the general manager at WRFH, 101.7 FM of Hillsdale, Michigan, and a lecturer in journalism at Hillsdale College. And we'd like to welcome him to the program. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Morning, Amy. Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me, despite the circumstances.
Yes. Well, just tell us about, you know, the beloved talk show host and how he remade radio.
Yeah, this is, the piece at the American Spectator I wrote the middle of last year. Spectator had a big summer issue on, great Americans and sort of bringing back that spirit. And there's no one who was better suited to both exemplify Americanism, and also bringing that back than Rush Limbaugh. And I wrote a piece about how he was the right man to step through that door, you know, when the Fetterman Doctrine was revoked back in the late 80s, and how he remade radio. I don't have to tell your listeners, I'm sure, about his influence, about his special gifts, the talent on loan from God, as he often said. But for many outsiders, it was this opaque mystery, right? Why is this guy, this mean guy who just makes fun of people for 3 hours a day, so popular? And those people missed so much of what made Rush Limbaugh successful. They missed the entertainment value. Above all else, Rush Limbaugh was, the show was entertaining. Mm-hmm. Yes, politics defined the show, and yes, conservatism defined the show, but people listened because it was entertaining, and he was able to influence and convince multiple generations of Americans that conservatism was the right way, that it was the best way, because of his just massive gifts. But most among them, chief among them, was, man, he was a great radio host, and he knew how to entertain people.
And he could fill a space. Like if he was in this room, he would sing, you know, he could just, I don't know, there's no one in this world that will ever be Rush Limbaugh. But he didn't, you know, he did have a lot of critics. They say he was bombastic. He was, you know, he was against feminism with what he said about Sandra Fluke. Remember that back then when she wanted to mm-hmm. have you know, what exactly? I can't even remember what Sandra Fleur. It was, oh, she wanted birth control as part of Obamacare to be included.
Right.
But he never backed down. He never shied away from anybody. Was he scared of anyone in this world?
He had built this relationship with his audience that was absolutely unbreakable. And as long as he had his listeners and his audience, I don't think there was much for him to fear, because he had the people who would be loyal to him no matter what happened. You know, this relationship he built is so special and unusual, and he did it over a long period of time, obviously, 30-plus years. Radio, as you know, is an intimate medium. We have these one-on-one conversations with people, largely when they're alone, right? When they're in the shower, when they're in the car commuting, when they're working around the house, when they're exercising. It's one voice talking to another. And in this day of headphones and earbuds, it's even more intimate. You're literally talking, whispering in someone's ear, having that communication. And Rush, inadvertently or intentionally, and I think maybe inadvertently, but it worked out really well, made it even more intimate because, you know, he rarely had guests on the show, and he took callers sporadically, except that open line Friday.
Scott,
and so for so many hours of the week, Amy, it was just the two of us,
It's Jim.
Rush and the listener.
Yeah, Jim. But I suppose you could have figured out it was Jim. Okay, so
unless I talk real low.
Right,
so,
Jim.
So it seems to me that there's this notion that conservative radio and conservative media in general can't have personality, can't have entertainment value, can't have comedy. Why has that happened? Why was this? Is it just been painted by the liberal media that if you are a conservative and slash a Republican, which whatever, I call myself a conservative, not a Republican, you can't have personality and comedy? What's up with that?
Well, I'll talk specifically about, you know, the radio sector. It's what I know best. I worked a day in D.C. at the Kirby Center, Hillsdale College's Kirby Center. We had a studio down there, and all the Salem National hosts were using it one day. Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Michael Medved was still there, and even Sean Hannity stopped by, too. And I worked with all of them in the span of a day. And I think the mistake that many critics of conservative talk, conservative communication make, is this expectation that every host is the same. Every host has the same opinion. Every host is using the same talking points. And, of course, there's nothing further from the truth. All of those guys prepped differently. All of those guys had different agendas, had different main points to make. And all of them peppered their show with humor and lightheartedness. You can't do this job without it. And Rush was a master at that. He was optimistic. He was full of hope for the country. And I think critics largely just don't listen, just don't pay attention. They don't spend the time with these voices to understand how they are entertaining and informing an audience. Rush's show is humorous.
Right. And you can't you can't get your message across unless it's fun for someone to listen to, right? I mean, sometimes, and I like Dennis Prager's show quite a bit. I'm not criticizing it at all. But the shows I tend to lean towards are the ones who can make me smile and laugh, and doesn't have to be all how everything's bad and we have to get everybody, you know, we have to get everyone on our side or else we're all going to die in a fiery crash.
And look, that was Rush's big breakthrough when he went national. It was lending that light touch to the proceedings. You know, I describe him in the piece as being this amalgam of Muhammad Ali, right, the braggadociousness, but kind of having fun with it, amalgam of Muhammad Ali and Paul Harvey, that Americanism. And, you know, one of Rush's heroes, great heroes, was Larry Lujack, the famed, legendary Chicago host. He took a lot from Larry Lujack. And so you sort of throw all of those influences together with a splash of William F. Buckley, of course, and sort of the bookishness and the learnedness of Buckley. Man, that's an unbelievable combination. Who wouldn't want to listen to that? And Rush's breakthrough is bringing all of those disparate factors together.
All right, Scott Bertram, you can read the article at spectator.org. It's titled Rush Limbaugh, Exceptional American. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Amy, Jim, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, so you own a restaurant, Branson Palatine. Are you demanding that all of your waitresses and staff members and busboys get a vaccine?
Wouldn't even consider it.
You wouldn't consider it?
No.
Well, in New York, there's a lovely bartender, and her name is Jacobson. Yes, that's her name. Not no relation to me.
Such a pretty name.
Oh, it's a gore. It just rolls off the tongue. Well, guess what? She got fired for not getting a COVID vaccine. Here she is.
I do have my reservations about it. Just like, you know, I need to talk to a doctor and just see how I feel.
And the reason she did not want to get a vaccine, Bonnie Jacobson, is because she is trying to get pregnant. And they, we don't know right now, Pfizer and Moderna are doing clinical trials with healthy pregnant women to see if it affects the baby, if it, you know, there's ill effects toward the mom. And so she didn't want to get the vaccine, and she lost her job.
And I was just like, wow, really? Like, I just worked for you through a pandemic. It's already been postponed. I would hate for something to happen and we get the vaccine and then have to hold off a few more years.
So she wants to have a child.
Yeah, it's perfectly reasonable on her part. And this, to me, like the internal conflict that happens when I hear a story like this, being like a free market capitalist and saying that small businesses should have the right to run their business the way they see fit, and then to see them do something so egregious and awful. I'm hoping you tell me what to think here. I think it's terrible what they're doing. But I think her reaction to, I mean, this is a new technology. If, you know, I have daughters who are both in their 20s, and I, again, they don't listen to what I say at all, which is fine. And I say, you know, I'm a consultant. I'm not, I don't want to have the dad role anymore. But I know if I was 25 years old and a female particularly, I wouldn't be rushing to get it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Because the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that getting vaccinated is, quote, a personal choice for people who are pregnant, and that expectant mothers can speak to their doctors about whether it's right for them. And if I was in childbearing years, I would not be wanting to get this vaccine.
But that's only half the discussion. The question we're saying is, does a small business, the restaurant, have a right to make decisions, even if they're absolutely ridiculous and stupid? Because Adam Smith, you know, would say that if you're the creator of the hand of, what's the invisible hand, creative destruction, if a business is run by morons, it should be wiped out and a better business takes its place. So you understand what my conflict is then, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And but companies in New York can fire you if you're not taking the vaccine.
Yeah.
That is some scary stuff here.
It's completely scary.
And she told the Post, Bonnie Jacobson, who's 34 years old, she's been married since October 2019, trying to get pregnant. You know, she thought that they would never turn on her, again, because she worked for them during a pandemic. So that's...
Tell her to come to work at Brant's Palatine. I know it's hard to relocate for a waitress job, but come on. We'll take you any day.
Red Hook Tavern is the place. Do not go visit them.
Not a chance.
If you're in New York. But also, too, is anybody having problems logging on to get the vaccine? And is it wrong for teachers to jump the line, so to speak, when getting a vaccine? Because I know that I could get a vaccine, but I'm waiting. And I've been trying valiantly to get my 80-year-old father and his girlfriend vaccinated because he hasn't left his house. And this is affecting that age group.
Yeah.
COVID is not going to kill me. COVID is not going to kill you.
No, but we should have started with vaccinating the older people, the people who are more at risk. This is silly that we started. I mean, the story about the hospital out in the northwest suburbs where they said, okay, hospital staff can get it. And what had ended up happening was every hospital staff that wasn't out on the floor, you know, who was sitting at a computer, like administrators, were like, oh, I'll sign up. So the first couple weeks was younger people who weren't even working with patients. Again, this, when government takes over the distribution of this vaccination, that all we can expect is for it to be stupid. But if you and I were doing it, we'd say, okay, it's open to everybody over the age of 80 today, next week over the age of 70, next week over the age of 65.
Yeah.
That's who's susceptible. Sorry. I don't care if they're rich or poor.
Exactly. That's it. That's who should be getting it. Teresa joins us from South Elgin. You are on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I'm 85 years old, and I'm not going to touch that vaccine because it's a tracking device. It hasn't been tested. There was already a pregnant lady that did die. She lost her baby, and many other people have been dying, but you're not going to see it on the mainstream media.
Teresa, what makes
it's
you...
It's very evil.
Yeah, and you're going to have your own opinions. I got that. What makes you think that they're putting a tracking device in that little
Because
liquid
I've read
vial?
A lot about it. I do a lot of research and a lot of reading by very, very reputable people, and they're not quacks. And the point is, too, we should have freedom. If somebody wants to take it, fine. but there's very dangerous things that are going to happen, and it's not going to come out right away. There are many people that have been dying and getting sick and paralyzed, and I do not trust Fauci or the FDA or the CDC or the World Health Organization. That's a communist front. They're all evil. And they're just trying to create their new world order and make slaves out of it.
You do you, Teresa. And I appreciate that and respect your opinions. There's some things I disagree with. And I would say to the tracking thing, they're tracking us anyway. They don't need another device.
Oh, I know. They have our cell phones.
Our TV's listening to us. Their cell phones listen to us. So that's the only reason I'd go against it. I don't put it past them to try to track us. But again, you have an opinion. And to be nervous and skeptical about a new technology, I think, is reasonable and defensible.
Oh, and by the way, yesterday, Dr. Fauci, so if you are vaccinated, what can you do?
If you're vaccinated and you have a member of your family vaccinated, someone that's not lived with you, can I sit down and give them a hug and things like that? And the answer is very likely, of course you can.
Oh, thanks. Dr. Fauci.
Thanks,
Doc. You mean I can hug my children? Wait. I could hug my mom if she's vaccinated, and my dad.
My younger daughter's been irritating me lately. I'm not going to hug her yet, just to be clear. And if you're listening, you know why.
Well, quickly, let's go to George in Libertyville. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I've been listening all the time. But I'll tell you what, you know, where the heck is the ACLU in this whole past year? What an organization they've proven themselves to be.
I know. That's crazy. And I have to tell you, my friend Dorsch, who listens to the show, he wants to have children. He's not getting vaccinated. He goes, hey, this isn't just about women. Don't forget about my gender. I don't want it to affect anything with my plumbing and trying to get pregnant.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good Friday morning. The sun is shining. That's good. Maybe they'll melt some of that snow. Amy Jacobson here. Jim Yurio in for Dan Prof today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. So many don't. But I know you took the time there and you nailed it.
I know. And it's a lot of work because towards the end of the week, you know, you get a little tired.
Yeah.
Yesterday, the Inspector General's office released a report, you know, going over how Chicago police, as they say, failed on every level when responding to protests over the unrest of the slaying of George Floyd, saying that they were ill-prepared. There was lack of coordination, a lot of confusion. And, yeah, there was, because I don't know if anybody... they should have seen it coming, but the response was awful, you know, horrible. They raised the Chicago's bridges. That was a bad idea. It goes on and on. So let's begin there with Gary McCarthy, former Chicago police superintendent, former candidate for mayor, and a good friend of the show. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning, Amy. I'm good. Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
So what did you read this lengthy report by the Inspector General's office? Because I got about a fourth through it, and I threw it down.
No, I read the executive summary, and there's a lot of words, and they don't really say a lot, certainly in the beginning. I mean, you could probably boil that report down pretty significantly, and it's going to say exactly the same thing with a lot less words. I think that what they're describing is really, and you just articulated, the state of CPD today. There's a lot of confusion. There's very little direction. And you know, it's a shame because that's not the state that it was in 5 years ago when I left. I could tell you that.
I know. What would you have done differently? I mean, I was just trying to tweet out a picture, it was video, of some punk kids beating up a female police officer on Michigan Avenue. I don't know if you saw that. I tweeted it out, and then Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
And it was so infuriating. And she would have died. I mean, the mob was after her. They were under attack. And guess what, Gary? They took that video down. I can't retweet it. I wanted to, you know, tease this segment saying, you know, this is what happened back in May. And they took it down. But you guys were all under attack, and no one's sticking up for police here.
No. And that's the environment that we're living in today. Amy, you know, I have to do this every time somebody talks about the riots. You have to harken back to the 2012 NATO summit where, you know, we had a plan. We trained for it. We equipped our officers properly, and we gridded out the city, and we deployed our resources across the city. We didn't give up. the neighborhoods in the name of saving the downtown. And, you know, the thing that can't be overlooked is the turnover at the top of CPD based upon the politics of Chicago. And when I thought about it, the individuals who were in leadership positions back in 2012 who helped create and execute that plan, which went swimmingly, we created a gold standard for crowd control in the country, none of them are there. There was one guy, a guy named Steve Georges, who has since retired, who was banished off the bogeyland, if you will. He was really one of the key components in making that thing happen, and he was assigned to McCormick Place, like I said, in a political bogeyland. Everybody else was gone. So none of the leadership of the department was there when we did it. I mean, they were on the job, and we did an in-depth critique of that event, and it's on a shelf on 35th Street, and all I had to do is dust it off and execute that plan, and these things would not have happened.
Gary,
but nobody did that.
Gary, when looking at it from the outside, it seemed to me that the mayor's office and the top brass above the police department, they actually welcomed it, not just in Chicago, but across the country. They thought this was some great, wonderful movement where everybody looking at it could say, no, this is going to erupt into violence and looting because it has every other time. And it almost seemed like it was welcomed. There was videos of Mayor Lightfoot handing out water to the protesters, soon to be rioters. I don't think the police did that much wrong. Where's the blame belong?
Well, it really, Jim, it goes across the board. And the politics of this thing are disgusting in my book. If I'm not mistaken, Mayor Lightfoot, after the event at the Columbus statue in Grant Park, talked about that being a peaceful protest.
Oh, I know.
Well, you know, explain that to the officer who lost the vision in his eye.
It's called vandalism. It's not peaceful, yeah.
No, they were a police officer lost his vision.
Geez, yeah,
82
right, too,
police
yeah.
officers were injured. Again, watching that video, I was sick. I'm like, my God, they're at war. They had like foaming at the mouth trying to kill these police officers, and nobody was there. How would you have handled that situation on that day in July?
Well, but again, Amy, you handle it before it happens. One of the things that we did really properly, something that we created at NATO, was we actually scooped the agitators out of the crowd. And I got to say this, you know, there was a different couple of groups of people who were here during those riots. There were people who were genuinely concerned about disenfranchised communities and police-community relations. They're genuinely concerned. There were people who were here in other vogues, but there was also a group of people who were here absolutely organized to incite the crowd. They had like three or four different components, and I don't know if it was Antifa, that's what people say, but better organized than we were, let's put it that way. They had one person who was inciting the crowd. They had another person who was abusing the police verbally and getting in their faces. They had somebody else who was breaking windows with a hammer. And they had somebody else who was doing graffiti at the same time.
I mean,
and that's why this happened so quickly. But the problem is we didn't react to it. I'm told that the mayor's office, and I'm going to say mayor's office because God only knows who in that office was doing it, if it was done, did not allow the police to put on their riot gear. Now, the press calls helmets and batons riot gear, which it's not. Every police officer in the country has a helmet and a baton. But at the same time, I'm talking about the individuals who are trained in groups, these response teams, to dress in the turtle suits, as we called them, with the chest protectors, the knee guards, the elbow pads, and so on and so forth. They would go into a crowd and extract, if you will, the agitators before the crowd could even react to it, and everything would come right back down.
And that's not a particularly complicated process, identifying the agitators, right? You guys could do that
They were putting on, in this video, you can see them, they're putting on these black jumpsuits. They have color-coordinated umbrellas. The leaders had the white umbrellas, yeah. And everyone else had a black umbrella. I mean, this was a planned attack. They had to practice.
Oh, right. And I was
because
at the
this,
one in Palatine.
That stuff doesn't just happen.
I walked through the protest in Palatine, and there was even some, there wasn't enough agitators to make it into anything at all. But I could tell there were some people who came from other places and whose job it was to get things going. I mean, and I'm an idiot. You guys are trained to do that. It would have taken you 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you make a good point that they come from the outside. My friend Bob Tracy, who was here with me, he was a crime control strategy chief, is now the chief in Wilmington, Delaware. And during these riots in Delaware, he was locking up people from Oregon.
Yeah.
Now, just think about that for a second. If you live in Oregon and you want to go protest something about George Floyd, you're going to go to Los Angeles, you're going to go to Seattle, you're going to go to Portland. But they came here, or there, I should say. So it's really obvious, like you said, they were better organized than we were. And that covers the gamut of the department. They didn't even give the officers the ability to defend themselves, which I find disgusting.
That's why I don't blame the police.
Yeah. I know, I don't either. And I don't, you know, they say that police are accused of beating protesters or hiding badge numbers. Well, you're at war. You do what you have to do to survive. That's just my opinion. But then if you look at the riots that happened in Kenosha over the Jake Blake incident, 74% of the people arrested were not from Wisconsin. Oh. We're from all over.
Yeah.
So this is an organized group that is being paid by someone, and I would love to find out who the someone is, you know, for transportation and for
conspiracy theorists, tinfoil hat wearing theorists.
Right.
I mean, that's what they tell us all the time. I think these people who are, they're the other side of that is just ridiculous. If you think everything is just, it's not a coincidence, I think you're out of your mind.
And so now this new thing is popping up, Operation Safe Pump. Listen to this, Jim. District tech teams, community engagements can bring some security to motorists during this crisis of carjackings by simply pumping gas for seniors. So they want tactical officers to pump gas for seniors. Each district should assign 2 TAC cars to a gas station for 30 minutes to 1 hour and pump gas for senior citizens.
And we're paying for this, right?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, did any police officer sign up for that, Mr. McCarthy, to pump gas?
No, I don't think so. And I want you to realize, of course, that the tactical teams are the individuals who go out and catch violent offenders. That's like the special forces, if you will, of the police. And what we're doing is we're taking the best that we have, because that's who they're supposed to be, and really hamstringing them and having them doing something that I think is pathetic. The way that you stop a carjacking crisis is you lock up the carjackers. And the way that you do that is you look at the patterns and the trends. There's going to be times and places where it happens more often. There's going to be people who you start arresting and you start seeing patterns of who they are. The cars are going to be recovered somewhere. So if they get taken somewhere like in Boys Town and they end up, oh, wait, it's not called Boys Town anymore.
No, it's called Halstead Business District.
Yeah.
But
if a car gets taken on the north side and ends up on the west side or the south side, then you can figure out, you know, then you're looking at a geographical pattern. You're looking at the times and the places and the types of cars that are being taken. You deploy your resources to those places and times, and you lock them up.
It's a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
And a lot of these are high school students who should be in school.
Amen.
Carjackings are up 283%. From last year. And one kid, he was 15 and 16, this trio that worked together, they carjacked 9 people in 2 days.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Amy? I mean, we could go on and on, but we're forgetting about the murder rate.
Oh, yeah.
The murder rate has almost doubled since the time that I was superintendent. Hmm. I mean, you know, so, hey, listen, Chicago, congratulations. This is what we want because this is what we decided.
Well, elections have
and
consequences.
And if you keep doing what you always did, then you'll always get what you always got.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
Here we are,
Mayor. I mean, I'll never forget the 2012 NATO summit. You were out there on the front lines. You were with your team. And David, or Superintendent Brown, during the riots in May and in July, he was at some undisclosed location watching from afar. You know, people like to that their leaders are out there with them working with
no
them.
No doubt about it. Particularly with Gary McCarthy.
Is he still here?
Pardon?
Is he still here, David? Is David still here? I'm not sure. I haven't seen him. Have you?
No, I haven't seen him in a long time. But so
you were able to win me over even with that non-Chicago Boston accent, and that's a feat. You did that.
So, Jim, you just lost me because I'm from the Bronx.
Oh, hey, my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'll win you back.
That's the Yankees Red Sox.
Yes, it is. Now that I hear it, I'm sorry. I just knew. I mean, there's only two accents that I know of, North Side and South Side Chicago.
And I say the Jewels.
Well, all right, the accent may never go away, but neither am I. I'm here 10 years now, believe
good.
It or not.
Good. So, good to have
God,
you.
It's been that long. So any aspirations to run for office again?
Absolutely not. Okay. I mean, it was one of the most distasteful things that I've ever done in my life. You know, and the result, I hope everybody realizes that when the campaign started, it was me and Ron. And okay. Ron dropped out because the polling said he was going to lose. And at that point, everybody jumped in. Every career politician on earth jumped in. Now, to her credit, Lori was in before that.
Right. But it was you, Vallis, and Lori Lightfoot. Yeah.
Yeah. And that split the vote so many different ways that, you know, we ended up with two extremely politically left candidates. And I'm really disappointed in that. And, you know, asking people for money is not something that I'm good at.
Oh, I hate that.
I'm the guy who gets in the car and drives to the supermarket instead of asking my neighbor for a cup of sugar.
Yep.
You know, so I don't think so. I don't think I have the.
It just went from no way to I don't think so, just so you know. So it seems like you're getting good at politics.
Oh, please, Jim.
Yeah. I've already lost you. I'm not winning you back now.
All right, Gary McCarthy, thank you so much for joining us. Former police superintendent with Chicago with CPD. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great weekend.
You too, Amy. Thanks for meeting you, Jim.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Friday morning, Amy Jacobson here, Jim Urio, and today for Dan Proft, and you've been killing it. You're good at this radio thing.
There's so much to talk about today. We have Madigan, we have Rush Limbaugh. I mean, Dan's going to be jealous that he was off on such a big news day.
Yeah, he will be back on Monday, and thank you, too. Because you are the owner of Brants and Palatine.
Right, we haven't plugged that in at least 10 minutes. Let's do that again.
I know, but thank you for the sweatshirt.
Oh, my pleasure.
And, and Justin's looking forward to the long sleeve T-shirt.
That he's going to get.
That he's going to get, because he really likes the long sleeve T-shirt.
No, he's got good taste.
He does. Oh, yeah. No, he knows how to use that T-shirt. Trust me. So last week, we were trying to get to it. We talked about it a little bit, about Governor DeSantis, because he came under fire because Biden had this crazy plan since there's this new strain that could be more deadly. We don't know. It could spread more quickly than the regular strain, the China virus, but you have the UK virus and you have the South African virus. And there was talk of banning travel to Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. Biden was strongly against banning travel to China. And DeSantis fought back, and I'm so glad he did.
People have asked me about, there was some type of report about potential travel restrictions on Americans and on Floridians. And I think it's an absurd report that they would be doing that. I think it would be unconstitutional. Yeah. It would be unwise and it would be unjust. And if you think about it, restricting the right of Americans to travel freely throughout our country while allowing illegal aliens to pour across the southern border unmolested would be a ridiculous but very damaging farce. So we will oppose it 100%. It would not be based in science. It would purely be a political attack against the people of Florida. And it's unclear why they would even try talking about that. Just look at the COVID situation in the state of Florida. So since December, the last couple months, Florida's cases per capita compared to the rest of the country, 28th.
Yep.
27 other states higher per capita cases. And for the entire pandemic, it's a similar story.
Wow, a politician sounding so logical. That's just, I'm going to need a time to process that.
Oh, and guess what? That Super Bowl surge.
Wow.
Has that happened?
No.
We're more than 2 weeks out.
Or
what about that
Thanksgiving?
Yeah, the Thanksgiving surge never happened. Christmas surge never happened. For more on this, let's welcome back to the program George Perry, former federal and state prosecutor, regular contributor to the American Spectator and blogs at, and also he wrote a column, Life in DeSantis's Florida, Time Travel to America. Good morning, George, and thanks for joining us again.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, so in your article and spectator.org, which we will tweet out so people can read it, you talked about comparing Florida and how different governors are, Republican governors, are behaving and acting compared to Democratic governors. What have you learned?
Well, in the article, I compare my experience in Pennsylvania, where I reside most of the year, with what we have experienced down here in Florida. I'm in Southwest Florida right now, probably within shouting distance of Dan Proft, but that's another story. My wife and I were debating whether or not we would come back to Florida for the winter months. And then I saw a video from our county commissioners in the Pennsylvania county where we live, where they said, well, and when it comes to getting the COVID vaccine, we are not going to be able to inoculate or vaccinate all of the people in Category 1A until the end of the year. It's going to take us a year, I should say. That means that everyone over the age of 65 and people with comorbidities who are in Category 1A, Pennsylvania isn't going to be able to get the job done just for that group of people for a year. So that decided it. We came down to Florida because our friends down here said, that's ridiculous. You can get inoculated down here if you can establish your temporary residence. Well, we have a Florida bank account and we have a place in Florida that we lease. I won't go into all the weeds of how you do that. So we came down, and within 11 days of arriving in Florida, we got vaccinated.
Gosh.
And Florida is on track. They've so far, as of February 13, they've vaccinated over 2 million people in Florida, and they're doing it at the crack of about 100,000 to 150,000 a day.
And George,
so they've got
did they start with the older population right away, or did they make the mistake that some of the other – they did. Okay.
Yeah. And that's the thing about what DeSantis has done. Another comparison that I draw is in Pennsylvania – our Secretary of Health, under our Democrat Governor Tom Wolf, our Secretary of Health, Rachel Levine, had instigated an order requiring nursing homes and long-term care facilities to take COVID patients. And three-fourths of the deaths in Pennsylvania have occurred in those nursing homes. So that's what they did in Pennsylvania. And you'll be happy to know, by the way, that Rachel Levine is on track to become Biden's assistant secretary of health.
Sure, you promote
him. And he's the transgender. Yeah. Or she
is. Yeah, she's transgender.
Well, yeah,
no,
yeah.
He. Wait.
I don't know. Whatever. And I'm not trying to even be rude.
I'm not even being rude about that.
Yeah,
but, no,
right.
But is it true, though, George, that Rachel Levine took her mom out of a nursing home and put her up in a hotel? Is that true or is that a rumor?
No, that's absolutely true, and I cite that in the article. The question becomes, did Rachel Levine believe that they would be putting nursing home patients at an increased risk of harm if they put COVID patients into the nursing homes? And the answer is obviously yes, because Rachel took her mother out of a nursing home while they were implementing that order. So that's what we had in Pennsylvania. DeSantis, on the other hand, took exactly the opposite approach. And he says it in the video clip that's part of the article that I've written. He said, look, we decided, or I decided, meaning DeSantis, that if we had to build extra hospital facilities, field hospitals, to take care of the COVID patients, that's what we were going to do. We were not going to put COVID patients into long-term care facilities where we have our most vulnerable patients, our most vulnerable population. And as a result, they have not had the same rampant deaths among the older population down here in Florida. And believe me, speaking as an old person, every other person in Florida appears to be old.
Right.
They have not had the kinds of losses and deaths that we have experienced in places like New York and Pennsylvania and New Jersey, where they did take COVID patients or required the long-term care facilities to accept COVID patients. So the Florida record is so far superior to what has gone on just on the COVID front. And you add to that the fact that Florida's economy has not been shut down.
Right. Has anyone run numbers?
And they still have schools. I was in Naples not long ago. I drove by Naples High School. And again, I start crying. You see school buses and you see kids that are happy and life is normal. People that live in Illinois are so brainwashed and they don't realize what is going on around them. Go to Utah, go to Wisconsin, go to Indiana for the weekend and see how these kids, they have their lives and people have their livelihoods. And I just wanted to quickly say, because you said that about 100 to 150,000 are being vaccinated a day in Florida. Guess how many are being vaccinated a day in Illinois?
61,000.
Okay. But the process is so different. And my dad is 80, and it is so hard. We call the Tinley Park Convention Center every day. We, you know, try to get online. And, you know, then another organization said download an app. My dad has a flip phone. There's no downloading of apps. You know, I mean, they make it so difficult that why can't we just be easy like DeSantis? People would like to stand in line in their cars, just like they did in Florida. And if you don't go in, you come back the next day.
And
they
why
have
do
nothing
we have
else to
keep...
do. They're retired.
Well, as a matter of fact, in Florida, they've been able to accomplish the 150,000 a day using a public-private partnership with Publix pharmacies down here. And now it is expanded to Walmart and to Winn-Dixie supermarkets and one other retailer. And there are more retailers getting involved in this program. So they're ramping up.
Are these pharmacies making a buck from this, which I hope they do,
Well, they're not charging you for the vaccine. But here's the thing with I'm sorry for interrupting, but the thing with the pharmacies is we should have done that all along. Instead of driving all the way to Tinley Park, there are pharmacies, a CVS, a Walgreens, pretty much on every street corner in the city of Chicago. So elderly people who don't own cars can walk there or take a bus. It's so much easier. And that's what we're used to when we get our flu shot. We don't go, you know, have a National Guard member shoot us, you know, give us an inoculation. But I just think Pritzker went about it all the wrong way.
Of course, even like the notion that when you get your first vaccine, then you have to at that time schedule. And it's like, regimented, you have to schedule your next vaccine. Who cares? When you get the shingles vaccine, they just tell you, come back and get your second dose in a couple of weeks. And if you don't, you don't. You know, that's on you. Why can't more be on us and make it an easier, more streamlined process?
Well, I mean, the process that we went through was we went to a Publix pharmacy. They have a website you go to. Publix has the website. And you go on there, and it's almost like a lottery, but it's pretty easy to get set up. And then you go and you make your appointment, and you go and you get inoculated, and they tell you to come back in 28 days, and they set the time aside for you to come back in 28 days. So we're going to get our second dose of Moderna vaccine in mid-March, and then we will be vaccinated, and our friends in Pennsylvania are – it's like going to the Department of Motor Vehicles, you know, take a ticket, get in line, and we'll get to you when we feel like it.
It's just such a stark contrast between Democratic governors and Republican governors. But I'm glad you got your vaccine. Yeah. George Perry, thank you so much. Well, the article we will tweet out, it's at spectator.org. The title is Life in DeSantis's Florida, Time Travel to America. Thank you so much, George, and I'm glad for you and your wife. That's good news.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and stay warm.
All right, and enjoy Florida. Right. Jealous. And George Perry joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
All right, so we touched on this a little bit about Mayor Lightfoot. Guess how much money she used for COVID relief funds to pay Chicago police? Did you want to play the guessing game?
I know, because last time I played it, I did so terribly wrong. Go, just tell me.
Almost $300 million.
Sounds like a lot of money.
$300 million. Well, it's a bit of a problem because people thought that money should have gone to rent relief. You know, people like Denise Henderson, who's been out of work for a while.
Just kept checking email after email and nothing ever came of it. So now we're 4 months behind on our rent. I just don't feel like the police department needed it more than I did.
I don't feel the police department needed it more than I did. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Where was the shortfall in the police department's budget? Like, why did they need the money more than people?
Because of overtime and all the rioting. But then the report came out yesterday that this went, you know, to personal costs for police, that this was before the civil unrest for looting. So we got $1.2 billion from the federal government as part of the CARES Act, and she used $300 million of that $1.2 billion to pay for police. Instead of helping people with their rents
or their
mortgage.
Yeah, there's real people hurting. This whole thing, and I've been complaining about this the entire year, this has been the biggest roll-up of money and power from the lower middle and lower class. Everyone is making money on their Google and Amazon stock, and real people at the lower end of the economic spectrum have lost everything, and that's what we should be focused on. It's mind-boggling.
And then Alderman Daniel LaSpada said, compared to what Chicago did with the CARES money, to what L.A. has done.
Los Angeles County took this same pot of money that we put towards policing and put it towards rent and mortgage assistance. We could have done the same thing. It was a political choice not to.
312-642-5600. Now, the problem is, what will the mayor be spending the next round of COVID relief funds on? Because we're you know, ready to get another $1 billion here soon.
I thought we were defunding the police. I thought we were taking money away from them, which that was the stupidest thing I've ever heard, by the way, too. To fund the police. What does that even mean, and who came up with it? I'd love to do the history.
I saw
of that.
The best bumper sticker that said defund the media.
Yeah, how about that?
That's when I was in Florida. But again, does anybody trust Mayor Lightfoot with this next round of money?
No.
Because she wasn't transparent. Remember she said, if I become mayor, we're gonna have a transparent office and people are going to know and be part of the conversation.
She
secretly did this, and it's so strange. And what Pritzker did, why isn't anybody fighting back him? He used COVID relief funds for a Healthy Holidays campaign. Justin, didn't you sing that song, Healthy Holidays? Can you put that back on the board? It was a whole thing about wash your hands, stay 6 feet apart, wear a mask. It was a billboard campaign and a PSA that would run on
this
TV.
This makes me crazy.
That is such
but
a waste.
Implicit in the whole thing
cash.
Is that the government needs to tell us to wash our hands and to not make out randomly with strangers, and they don't need to help us on anything with this. When their involvement makes it worse more than better, and for us to be spending money on it. But when you talked about the Healthy Holidays thing, I keep thinking of Mary Lori Lightfoot in the costume.
Corona Busters.
Wow.
I mean, who thought that was no words?
Yeah.
All right, well, here's Governor Pritzker.
Healthy holidays.
Oh, no.
Healthy holidays. Healthy holidays.
Healthy holidays.
While the privileged keep living, healthy holidays to you.
Woo! That wasn't Governor Pritzker.
The lampooning it deserves.
That was Justin Kosek making fun of the healthy holidays.
Did he
PSA.
Do that live or was that recorded?
I don't know. But you know what? I'm going to ask him next time I see him. How much did you spend on that healthy holidays? When that money could have also gone to help small businesses that he shut down.
Yes, and he remains shutting down, by the way, too. A restaurant that's operating at 40% is losing money. Restaurants are not designed to operate at 40% and turn a profit. It can't happen. So, you know, and I know that most restaurants in the suburbs, I'm not speaking at all about mine, are doing what they can to make money, even if they have to bend the rules a little bit. And most of the local mayors have said that's fine and they're not going to enforce it. But if we are acting like the fact that he went from 25% in restaurants to 40%, he's opening things up. That's a strict lockdown. Tell me, you know, you haven't been to a wedding or a baptism or, you know, any sort of social gathering. We're still in a dramatic lockdown.
Sean in Elmwood Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hi, Sean.
Good morning. Good morning. Listen, Jim, I want one of those shirts. I just want to know if you got one for somebody with upper body development. I don't need the prof one like for Gumby. I need one, you know, for a man. So I'll give you.
Is this the Sean?
You an
this
Elmhurst.
Is Sean. Sean.
Yes.
Okay.
This is Sean.
I know Sean.
So I'll give you the Elmhurst Cigar House with the Biden voters keep out on the back. You give me one of your hamburger joint ones, but I want the long sleeve one. You understand? Because I don't want you making out on me like this thing, like when we used to trade. How you guys in the desk always tried to take advantage of the pit guys.
And we still
this
do.
Time I get you, Jim. What do you think?
Still do? Yeah. In deal. Sold. Filled. Whatever. You're done. Not
all right, good. See, good. That's how you cut a deal, Amy. Not like you. Right. This is how you cut a deal.
Yes. Thanks, Sean. Love you. Miss you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic. Open mic Friday. Call in now.
Open Mic Friday has arrived. We are here and ready for business. Jim Yurio in for Dan Prof today. Dan will be back on Monday, so that's good. But thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. This has been
so
much fun.
Did you practice before you got
no,
here? Because we've
I
never worked
talk
together.
A lot. No, I like to talk. You tell me I can be on for 4 hours. I'm surprised I haven't said anything that was going to get me kicked off air. I've been on a trading floor for 35 years, and oftentimes we don't. The language is colorful, and I've been able to keep it under wraps. So thank you for helping
oh,
me.
Oh, yeah. So Joe Biden, excuse me, President Biden, still having a hard time saying that, had this town hall and forgot. I don't know. Well, you listen.
And the biggest thing, though, as you remember, when you and I, I shouldn't say it that way, as you remember, but when you and I talked last, we talked about it's one thing to have the vaccine, which we didn't have when we came into office, but a vaccinator. How do you get the vaccine into someone's arm?
We didn't have a vaccine when we came into office. This is after he was vaccinated, not once, but twice.
Yeah.
Before he even took office. Which, the vaccine was there.
But this
people
is
were
his
getting
history,
the vaccine
though.
In December.
You remember he got run out of two presidential campaigns for plagiarizing and for lying. Remember that whole video? And even the media at the time dragged him through the mud for saying, you know, I graduated top of my class in law school. I was the only one there in a full academic scholarship. And none of it was true. So I actually sometimes feel sorry for him. It seems like he gets on a roll and he just forgets what's real and what isn't. And he just spits out whatever pops into his head.
Well, President Trump heard this and he was on Newsmax and responded to what might really be going on here.
Well, I saw that he said that there was no vaccine when he came into office, and yet he got a shot before he came into office. And it was already in early November that we announced it, but we actually had it substantially before that. And we were giving millions of shots and millions of doses, so he was either not telling the truth or he's mentally gone. One of
the two. And then later on, President Trump said, former President Trump, he said, or he could have just been joking. But I just think he just has a lapse in judgment. I mean, listen to this. This is a few weeks ago. He's trying to explain how the vaccines are going to be distributed.
Expect these additional 200 million doses to be delivered this summer. And some of it will come as early, begin to come in early summer. But by the midsummer, that this vaccine will be there. And the order and that increases the total vaccine order in the United States by 50% from 400 million order to 600 million. This is enough vaccine to fully vaccinate 300 Americans.
300?
By end of the summer, the beginning of the fall.
Ouch, sorry.
But we want to make, look, that's, I want to repeat, it'll be enough to fully vaccinate 300 Americans.
300 million Americans? I mean.
What's a couple million, a couple decimal points between friends?
I just had to get that off my chest.
It's cringeworthy.
It is.
And I lose my train of thought too, and I'm. You know,
so do I.
Like 50 years younger than Joe. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just wild to me that it happened so consistently.
And he's going to outside of Kalamazoo today to visit a Pfizer plant. And I wonder if Nurse Jill, I mean, if his wife Jill is going to be with him. Because she literally, if you watched him during the campaign, the few times that he was out, she literally walked him off stage like, come here, Joe, come here, you know, and grabbed his arm. I mean, yeah. I think they have a great relationship. It's not about that, but it's about his cognitive ability to lead.
Right, and I know every time we elect, it started with Reagan, every time we elect an old president, one side says, well, his cognitive ability, this and that. And I actually believe it's kind of true this time, and you can tell that he doesn't keep a train of thought very well.
312-642-5600, grab a line. Let's go to Eduardo in Midway. You are on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning. You know, this is Black History Month, and they're behind on distributing vaccines to Latino and the black population. And now they're going to throw an immigration bill, which is going to hurt African-Americans as far as getting jobs. So what kind of slap is that?
Yeah.
And the African-American and Latino community have been particularly hurt by this pandemic more than anyone else. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think it's absurd. I hope that part of it isn't some mistrust in those communities of the system. Do you think that is at all, Eduardo?
Oh, you got rid of him?
Okay,
sorry,
then how about you,
Jim?
It's okay. He seemed like he knew what he was talking about.
Well, he was talking about the Immigration Act, and that's 8-year path to citizenship for the 11 million undocumented immigrants who arrived before January 1st. Dreamers and farm workers who can show a work history will have an expedited process to get a green card. And that changes the terminology. Ready for this? Because, you know, it's all about words.
Of course.
Alien to non-citizens under federal law. So you no longer could say illegal aliens. You have to use the word non-citizens.
But not illegal non-citizens.
Yeah. I mean, this still has to go through approval process, but that's what the plan is.
Yeah.
Byron, who joins us from the western suburbs, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Amy and Paul. Hey, I have a comment and I have a question on the carjackings and the gangs in Chicago. Amy, if you remember, Roberto Asphalm was on your program over the summer. He wrote the book View from the Streets.
Oh, yes.
And I've been reading that. And he says the reason for the thefts of products on Michigan Avenue and things like that and carjackings is because it gives people who are poor status, and they can parade around and go, "This, I'm not poor." That's one of the reasons why they're doing it. Now, my question is, the poor neighborhoods, they're so lacking in jobs. You know, we know the poverty rate is as high as 36%. Why doesn't the mayor and the aldermen pressure large companies to come to those neighborhoods and create jobs? And they have the police to do it. That's what my question is, and I'll let you answer.
Jim, do you have an answer to the question?
Well, no. I mean, Thanks, Byron, for the phone call. Thank you. Yes. The notion that we can create jobs, the only thing that government is capable of doing is establishing policies like increasing minimum wage to $15 an hour across all communities. I mean, that's a very much an anti-poor neighborhood, anti-minority community job. When you do that, statistics show that nobody seems to care. As a matter of fact, when minimum wage was even brought about on the scene back in the 40s and 50s, it was specifically designed to keep African-Americans from competing for white people's jobs. So creating jobs, really? Government, not only is government can't create jobs, all they do is kill jobs. They just got to get out of the way, in my opinion. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then, you know, with this mandatory minimum wage that's going on in California,
yeah.
Kroger grocery chain, they're just closing stores.
Of course.
Because they can't pay it.
Yeah. The problem with the minimum wage laws is there's like 5 different ironclad arguments against it. And people, economists that I know, like, they get so flustered as to which way to tell you how stupid it is that they get confused. And so many, you know, Thomas Sowell, one of my favorite economists, always said that over the last 50 years, things that the biggest problem is things that sound good are replacing things that work. And when you say $15 an hour, wouldn't it be great if everyone made $15 an hour? Yeah, well, you pay them $15 an hour. Oftentimes, particularly in the restaurant business, you know, 1/3 of restaurant business don't make it, I think it's 1 or 2 years. So you're sitting back saying party A should be paying party B $15 an hour without having any idea if party A even is making any money at all. And you then call yourself charitable. Why don't you pay them $15 an hour?
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Not a sustainable system.
Right.
Let's go to Terry in Rogers Park. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Amy, I hope you keep fighting the CPS. It sounds to me like they've got a real racket going on that needs to be investigated. It's unbelievable how much money they cost the taxpayers.
Oh, yeah. And the average teacher makes $108,000. That's the average teacher. That's not even including if they coach any sports or anything. And that's what, you know, when we had Andrew and Jimdesky was, Adam and Jimdesky.
You never heard that one. I'm not even trying.
But I used to be able to pronounce it.
Adam.
And Dovjeski. Oh, no. All right. Well, we had him on, and there's a great article that you should read about that because he nailed it. I mean, they did a really good job of pointing out that we're paying these teachers So much money, and they're not even in the classroom teaching. It's a racket. It's a joke. Let's go to Bob in Buffalo Grove. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Amy, and you too, Jim. By the way, Jim, my middle name is Brandt.
Fantastic. Do you go to Brandt's? You live in Buffalo Grove. It's only 10 minutes away. Have you been there?
Yeah, I've been meaning to come, and I want to have a mini reunion with my classmates there.
Fantastic.
Here's my question for you. I missed talking to you to offer this information. We recently had celebrity deaths of Mary Wilson and Christopher Plummer, and now we can add the sad passing of Rush. However, I doubt you heard of the passing of Leslie Robertson. I didn't see any mention of his death in the news. Do you happen to know of him?
I do not. Do you, Amy?
I do not, but I think it might have something to do with engineering.
Yes, it does. February 11th, he passed away, one day short of his 93rd birthday. And I was fortunate enough to meet him in person, actually several times. And his claim to fame, he was a world-famous structural engineer. But sadly, he will be remembered as being the engineer for the World Trade Center buildings.
Oh.
And it was amazing that they never covered that. One other thing might be of interest. I'm hoping that PBS, the WTT station, TTW station in Chicago, they aired a documentary a year ago, and hopefully they'll rerun it on his life of a year. It's an hour and a half documentary. It's called Leaning Out. You can actually purchase it online. It's an amazing story of his career, designing the towers, talking about how the towers collapsed, and the other great structures he designed throughout the world.
Thanks, Bob. Hurry. We've got other calls to get to.
Next week is Engineers Week, and I'll be celebrating.
I don't know what to wear. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah,
he's very passionate about
engineering. I like it. He's an engineer. Yeah.
Yes. Janice in Morocco, Indiana. Dear Lord, butchered that. What's the name of your town?
Morocco.
Morocco. Yes, in Morocco.
Yeah. What's up? Hi. Last week, you talked about the Obama Museum. So there's three things I'd rather do than visit the Obama Museum wherever and whenever they build it. One is to watch Joe Biden sign an executive order. Two, watch 5 minutes of The View. And three, take a walking tour of the local landfill.
All right. Thanks, Janice.
I like the preparation. Well done.
I think she rehearsed that.
Yes.
Charlotte in Arlington Heights.
Hi, did your mother ever get vaccinated?
Yes, she's on the list. She lives in Tucson, and she is scheduled to get it this week and then again, in 2 weeks. Yes.
My point is, in Illinois, guess who is included in Class 1B?
You're about to ruin my day, I can tell.
Lawmakers.
We have not prioritized, as in Massachusetts, seniors over 75. We have thrown in 3 or 4 million other workers with the poor 80-year-olds, postal workers, bus drivers, Home Depot, supermarket clerks, school office personnel, and I believe the teachers. So,
and lawmakers, too, because of the state reps and state senators didn't want to. They're like, it's dangerous because the last time we met, somebody got COVID. Well, no, duh.
Also, people in jail, I think, get it. Again, other states prioritize the over 75 people. But you're in trouble here.
If you were in New Jersey, you could start smoking or just spend some time at the buffet table because they had smokers or people with obesity issues were being prioritized in New Jersey.
Oh, so celebrating the poor eating choices they make.
That
makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Dave in Bolingbrook.
Yeah, the reason I'm calling today is that just to correct something that the guest host said, having to do with shingles, okay? And I had my shingles shot last fall, and I had another one in the winter. What it is you have the shingles shot, and I'm an older guy, so it's called Shinglex,
Yeah.
The same thing. And you take this, and you take the next one no earlier than 2 months. 2 months. It's 2 months to six months.
Oh, okay.
Not
okay.
2 weeks. So I didn't want you shouting that out.
No, I appreciate that very much.
Dave, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not a politician. I can admit when I'm wrong.
I love listeners. Our listeners are so smart.
Yeah.
Quickly, let's go to Mary in Midway.
Oh, the previous caller, by the way, forgot Cloris Leachman. And what about Screech?
Oh, yeah.
That passed away, too. But
Screech
the reason I'm
from
calling
Ring by the Bell. Yeah, say by the bell.
The reason I'm calling is because, I can't believe we're still having these conversations. Here I go. Well, now that we're in Tier 4 or whatever, why are the libraries still having these restricted hours? I mean, I know a lot of young people that would be like, at least could we go to the library? It doesn't even open till 12 on some days, 10 on 2 days, and 11. It used to be, you know, at least some days were 9, and now that we're back in Tier 4, it should be back. I know I sound nice.
Phase 4. It's all right.
Who cares about a
phase
library?
Phase 4, no
a
tiers.
A lot of people do. Yeah. And get this, I tried to call. It was so hard to get through the alderman. Finally, the helper gave me Lori Lightfoot's number.
Oh,
so I called
great.
That, and yeah, it was like, this mailbox is full. It will not receive calls.
Yeah, go figure. Thanks, Mary, for the phone call. We're going to slam in some more calls.
Wait, I went to get a book for my daughter like 2 weeks ago at the library, and it literally, I felt like I was 18 years old buying pot from somebody. It's like a guy comes out to the car
in
a brown bag going, hey, are you Uriel? Yeah, it's me. Who's asking? I got your book. And he dumps it in the car and takes off.
My sister, when she went to the library to drop off a book, the guy, he had a moon suit on.
Yeah.
And she's like, are you okay?
Are you okay?
Put the book in that bag.
Okay, I hope you. That's when you say to the person,
"Yeah, just put the book down and walk away."
Oh my God, please, just walk.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.